And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning, and you're very welcome along to the 9 to noon show here on your number one local radio station. It's Highland Radio, and it's just approaching 5 minutes past nine. How's your week going so far? I hope you are very well indeed. And we've got a load coming up for you on the show today, including one of your favourite features. We're going to be talking history with Dr. Joe Kelly. Daniel O'Connell is going to be the focus of our conversation. We've that and so much more besides, and still loads of space for your topics, your calls and your comments. Right, how do you get in touch with us? And I implore you to do so, even if you've never contacted a radio station before. We're your local radio station, and you can contact us in confidence and to get a sympathetic ear to help highlight an issue that might be important to you, or even to spread some joy or happiness. We love it all, especially in these summer months. Okay, 086 60 25,000, that's the WhatsApp and text number, 086 60 25,000. If you prefer to pick up the phone and give us a call, it's 07491 25,000. And we love your comments too, on email, comments at highlandradio.com. a lot of you listening to the podcast, or perhaps maybe you work different shifts, or you're not a great sleeper and you listen to the overnight repeat, and you're emailing us, and we love it, and we can pick up your emails whenever you send them and carrying them through to the next show. And of course, just to remind you and invite you to watch the program. So if you're at home, work from home, working in the home, and you've got a TV above your fire in the front room or on the kitchen wall, open it up. It's going to be a smart TV at this stage, I would say. Open the YouTube app and type in Highland Radio Ireland, and we're there streaming live. You can watch the entire show. Also on the Fire Stick, it might be a little bit more convenient because they're less fiddly, I think, sometimes than smart TVs. Open up the YouTube app there. And we're broadcasting across Facebook and on the X platform. It's Thursday. Let's have a look at the papers, and we'll start with the Tyrconnell Tribune. The council's commercial rates arrears for last year was €13.8 million, according to the local government auditor's report. Seamus Leonard said the arrears had reduced by €0.7 million from the 2022 figure of €14.5 million. Rates collected in 2024 was €34.7 million, an increase of €3.3 million from 2023. This resulted in the collection yield for rates increasing from 78% for 2023 to 80% for 2014, a revelation for all ratepayers, was effective from January 2024. Re-evaluation, I beg your pardon. Valuations of rateable premiums were performed by Talta Éireann, with valuation certificates being issued to businesses in September 2023. So it's a decent return, 80% of rates being paid. It's a big return, €34.7 million from our businesses across the county, which is vital when coupled with central government funding to keep the county afloat. So fair play to those businesses. The reduction, I'm not sure, €0.7 million, whether that's down to rates being written off or, you know, payment arrangements being reached. I do know that if you are beginning to struggle, or you think you might struggle with commercial rates, the very best thing you can do is contact the council and have a chat to them in the first instance and be ahead of it rather than allowing it to sort of catch up on you. The Derry People Donegal News this morning: a Newtown Cunningham family who experienced an unimaginable loss almost 7 years ago is preparing to give back to the community that supported them through their darkest days. In November 2018, the Gallagher family's world came crashing down when their beloved son and brother Barry Gallagher took his own life. Barry, who was the son of Sean and Mary Gallagher, was just like any other 23-year-old. He had a big interest in cars and GEA and loved nothing more than a night out with his friends. And his 30th birthday would be approaching, and his family are going to be remembering Barry. I'll go inside just to give it a mention. It's a fundraising cycle, and you can go to a GoFundMe page, actually, to get more information on that. I'll dig that out and read it out properly a little later on, because those good GoFundMe links are quite convoluted. I'll give you the key search words if you want to support that family in memory of their son and brother. The Derry News this morning: a capacity audience in Derry's Cullerin Y Canan gave eminent surgeon Professor Nick Maynard a standing ovation following his presentation, Gaza, a War on Healthcare, organised by Trocra. Professor Maynard's harrowing account of his work in Gaza alongside his colleagues in medical aid for Palestine was the inaugural event of FELA 2025. Moving on to the Nationals now, and the cash keeps rolling in to the government coffers. Ireland on course for a record tax year, this despite the tariff threat. But that being said, it's not a threat anymore. The tariffs of 15%, we don't know necessarily where pharmaceutical is going, but all companies know that. The reality is the majority of these tariffs are paid by importers in America or by the American consumer. So unless consumer demand dies down, they should be able to absorb some of it. The importer absorbs some of it, and the consumer on that side absorbs some of it too. But bumper corporation tax receipts mean that the state remains on course for another record tax year despite the threat from US tariffs. The latest Exchequer return show tax receipts for the year to the end of July came to $58 billion. This was $3.6 billion, or 11% up on last year's record total at the same stage. The strong outturn was again driven by corporation tax receipts, which came to $1.2 billion in July, up nearly $900 million on the same month last year. So the money keeps rolling in. A lot of it is, of course, corporation tax. We're being told not to rely on that, but also we have to make sure that our citizens are looked after, especially those that are struggling. And I read these stories and we talk about these record years of tax intakes, and then there are still people who are struggling just to meet the basics, and there's no help for them. I'm not a financial expert by any stretch of the imagination, but you would imagine that more money should allow us to look after those that need it most. Not universal targeting. I don't think that works. I think giving rich people money they don't need is a waste of Exchequer money, but surely there is a way that we can use some of this money to ease the pressure on some families as we head into the winter. Though I suppose it's like me, if I were in opposition, it's maybe easier said than done. That being said, there are supports out there, and I want to make sure that as many of you as possible are claiming them, because 8.1 million euro in back to school cash was never claimed. So just double check, by the way, even if you are a working family, make sure that you're not missing out on something you may well be entitled to. A lot of people don't say, for instance, you know, check that they're not entitled to some money back from the taxman, for an example. A lot of people have been overpaying tax, and you can claim overpayment of tax back over multiple years. There are companies that will do it for you for a percentage if you don't want to do it yourself. But also make sure that, you know, you make certain that you're not missing out on things that you might be entitled to. Because the Daily Mirror reports over 8 million euro allocated for the back to school allowance went unclaimed last year. Figures contained in the Department of Social Protection's annual report for 2024 show the scheme cost the Exchequer 57.04 million last year. But a press release from the department in June 2024 states that some 65.2 million was secured for the scheme that year, meaning 8.16 million earmarked for it was unclaimed. The back-to-school clothing and footwear allowance is a one-off payment intended to help eligible families with the cost of school uniforms and footwear ahead of the school term. The amount spent on this scheme also declined drastically since 2023, when some 70 million euro was allocated to the measure and the department handed out a total of 86.07 million in allowances. This meant almost 30 million less was spent in the measure in 2024 than in 2023, and the number of families who benefited from the scheme also fell in the same period from 154,000 to 149,000. So there was a slight reduction there, but maybe people are leaving school or are able to avail of other benefits. But anyway, just to be on the safe side, maybe you are entitled to that. Double check. We don't want to leave any cash on the table, do we? Right. Now, I don't know what I've pulled this paper out for. I've mixed them up. Where are we here now? No, I've lost a story there. Let's go to some international news and potentially maybe some hope of a resolution to the situation in Ukraine. Donald Trump, of course, has set very strict deadlines of tomorrow for Putin to work harder, I suppose you could say, to try and come up with some sort of a ceasefire in Ukraine. How is he doing that? He's targeting people that are dealing with Russia. So India would be one of the biggest purchasers of Russian oil. So he's slapping massive tariffs on India. India say it's unfair, but he's saying, well, these are the tariffs that we're going to put on you because you are dealing with Russia, and the idea being that it squeezes Putin to the table. Donald Trump told allies that he planned to meet Vladimir Putin Putin next week, followed by a three-way meeting that would include Vladimir Zelensky, the Ukrainian president. The announcement has raised hopes that an end to the conflict could be in sight after more than 3 years of intense fighting. After speaking by phone to the American president, Mr. Zelensky said he believed Russia was now more inclined in a ceasefire. The positive signs come during a day of intense diplomatic activity. I think we'd all like to see an end to that, especially those actually living that nightmare. Elsewhere, though, this is in the Irish Daily Mirror. The UN has described the humanitarian catastrophe in Gaza as critical in a major intervention to the crisis. Israel, though, is poised to launch a major escalation of its military offensive, a move described as deeply alarming by Assistant Secretary General Jenka. The official spokesperson of UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said the situation in Gaza is critical and much more food needs to get in each day in order to keep the population of more than 2 million people from starving. So Israel's meeting today to decide its next action. The IDF, the head of the army, believes it's a trap effectively. He is not in favour of taking over much of Gaza, but Netanyahu is a law unto himself. He believes he quite literally is judge, jury and executioner. The Irish Farmers Journal. Irish beef prices are within 4 cents a kilogram of UK prices for the first time since 2022. Factory prices are being forced upwards by plummeting supplies of finished cattle. Numbers of finished cattle available to buy in March last week also dropped. This has left some factories unable to source enough cattle to fill their contracts. But of course, you squeeze people out of the farming industry, you're going to get less beef, less milk, aren't you? Some of the smaller independent factories have had to increase their quotes to secure weekly supplies. Last week's kill came in at 25,401 cattle. That's a lot of cattle, isn't it? Killed last week. This down, though, 7,000 head on the same week in 2024. Huge numbers of cattle exported in 2024 and 2025 mean the cattle supply problem is here to stay for processors in the short to medium term. On to the Irish Sun now. And what story did I pick out of it? I can't see anything on that page that's interesting. Right, okay, so I'll turn over because I opened the wrong page. This is a story many of you are following, the gang that snatched an Irish aid worker in Haiti yesterday have made a ransom demand. Mayo native Gina Herity was kidnapped from the St. Helen orphanage near the country's capital. This was on Sunday. Seven others, including a three-year-old, were also taken. The orphanage run by charity Nos Petis Ferreras et Sures, I think, is located in a part of Haiti that is controlled by armed gangs. It's a dangerous part of the world. And finally, I don't know if you believe in aliens. Do you believe in aliens? I mean, it's... I think it's almost naive to think that in the size of this system within which we live, that we could be the only intelligent beings. I mean, that would be really quite remarkable, wouldn't it? But it doesn't matter what I think. What do key people in America's intelligence think? Well, let's go to the top intelligence chief. See, she says she believes aliens exist. In a bombshell interview, the US Director of National Intelligence became the highest ranked government official to confess E.T. could be more than just sci-fi. But Tulsi Gabbard refused to reveal the evidence that led her to the conclusion. But she obviously has a lot of information. She now believes that aliens exist. Interesting too, do you remember those drones that were flying all over parts of America? And it was a big old mystery. Someone asked Donald Trump about that the other day and he says, well, we know what they are, but we can't say. I'm not saying they were alien, but who's to say? As I say, how many times can I say the word say? I just can't imagine that we could be the only ones. Or could we? Greg, can you announce where the food banks are and when they are open? Thank you, Greg. Yes, there are many in different places. The best thing for you to do is to contact DLDC. Their number is 074-912-7056 and they'll point you to the one closest to you or the area that you live in. So as I say, to go through them all, or I don't know specifically where you're asking, Mary, but DLDC 912-7056. We'll retain that number in case you didn't catch it and you want to get back to us. Hi, Greg. Donegal is the most deprived county in Ireland, yet we have the most I-Pass centres in Ireland. You seem to believe that the public can be gaslit indefinitely if you just shout misinformation loudly enough. No, idea what you're talking about, but I can tell you right now for a fact, when no one else was talking about pressures on services and this county's ability to cope with numbers, we've been talking about it all the while. Now, there are people who talk about this stuff an awful lot in online spaces that would have you believe otherwise, that, you know, this is some sort of a cover-up or this, that and that. We've been talking about this from the get-go. Months and months and months and months and months ago, we were talking about how Donegal's resources were being overstretched. We've talked extensively about concerns people might have in terms of security, not necessarily that there is a direct threat, but certainly how they perceive it to be. And we've covered it all. So I don't think I've gaslit anyone. But if you want to give me some examples, 086 60 25,000, you have the number because you've already messaged in. At Letterkenny and A&E, more than 30 patients have been waiting overnight before 10 p.m. for emergency treatment. The last member of the medical staff was seen around 1 a.m. I suggest a reporter sees the situation for themselves to ask pertinent questions. Thanks. Well, we are also of the area. I've been down there myself, if you call me a reporter. We all live here, and that's all our hospital, and we are acutely aware of the overcrowding issue, and that's why we've given it so much coverage, and that's why we thought it was so important to get behind the surgical hub campaign. So we know how dire it can be, unfortunately, because it's our hospital. It's our hospital too. Now, a letter from a listener, and this is a positive story. A small way for me to say thank you to some fine Donegal people, if you think it would make a good story for one of your shows, i.e. Greg's. Picture this. I'm over visiting family in Donegal with my wife and children from America. We've had a week, but now it's time to head back. We set off from Donegal at 6 a.m. to catch a flight out of Dublin, racing the clock to reach the airport by 10:30 a.m. Plenty of time, you'd think. Still half asleep, jet-lagged and blinking at the pumps, I pull into Mountaintop Petrol Station in Letterkenny at 6:30 a.m. Now, in America, the green pump means diesel and the black one is petrol. But in Ireland, it's the other way round. You can see where this is going. And that Dacia Duster I was driving, apparently designed by geniuses who've made the fuel tank so universal you could fit it with water. So I fill half the tank with unleaded before a whisper in the back of my brain says, wait a second, I suddenly remember what the guy at the Dublin Airport car hire desk warned me. Only two things aren't covered by insurance: losing the key and putting the wrong fuel in the tank. My wife, clearly the smart one, says, don't start the car. And thankfully I listen. So there I am, stuck at Mountaintop at 6:30 a.m. in the morning, family counting on me to get to Dublin Airport, and I've got a car full of the wrong fuel. Enter the Donegal magic. I walk into the central garage and ask around. It's early on Saturday. Some of the lads are still shaking off Friday night, but they're warm, welcoming. Phone numbers are shared, advice is given, and the message is the same. You'll need to get it to a garage. They don't open till 9. You'll have to take the tank off. There's an anti-siphon in that car. But this is Donegal. If there's anywhere in the world where strangers will help you out, it's here. I get the wife and kids to the airport in a taxi. Thanks to Liam, the taxi was cheaper than a divorce. And just when things are looking grim and it's stressful, along comes the bread man. Yep, the bread man, Junior. If you're from Letterkenny, you probably know Junior. He's been doing bread deliveries around town for over 30 years. He says, hold on, I've a fella. This is at 7 a.m. now. 30 minutes later, along comes Artis, a Latvian mechanic built like a boulder with hands blessed by angels and soaked in engine oil. He takes one look at the car and says, I think I can fix that. I spent the last half hour looking for a hose. Now we need a barrel and a hose. So Junior, without hesitation, drives me down to Watson's Hire at 8 a.m. to find a length of hose. He buys it himself, refuses a penny, drives me back all the way. He says, you're going to make it on the flight. By 8:30, Artis has the back seat pulled up and the hose attached in the pump, siphoning out the fuel into a large barrel Centra provided like a man possessed. No fuss, no fluster, just a Donegal Latvian saint muttering, I'll figure it out. Well, he does. By 9:30 a.m. the tank is emptied, and by some miracle, or maybe a bit of Donegal ferry dust, I scream down the M1, go to Dublin Airport by 11 a.m. and make the flight with the family. Apologies for anyone I passed on the road last month. If this had happened in San Francisco, no one would have even looked my way. But in Donegal, Junior the breadman stepped in and made the impossible happening too early on a Saturday morning. And he said, you're just got to do some good in this world. And he did big time. Thank you, Junior. Artis, the hardworking mechanic, a friend of Junior's, asked for nothing and delivered everything. Thank you, Artis. I hope you enjoyed a few pints on me. You truly made sure I didn't miss the flight. So Junior, Artis and the staff of the Centro Garage, thank you. And while old Sam didn't make it back this year, I can tell you this, there are everyday heroes in Donegal. Donegal and Ireland is full of kindness, full of champions. There you go. That comes from someone who was here recently. Very nice indeed. Well done to everyone involved in that. And, you know, we can talk about prices and this, that and thon, but the really important thing is that Cade Mila Fulcher, and that's who we are. A caller says, the government debated introducing the Occupied Territories Bill, then gave themselves a pay rise and took holidays. Slovenia step up and stop selling weapons to Israel and introduce their own version of the bill while we sleep. That Slovenia did that. Hi, Greg, could you give this a plug? Travelling to Kerry today, and en route, we stopped on the hard shoulder between Ballyshannon and Bundoran, and my father's phone dropped out of the car. We were well down the road before we realised. If anyone's walking and finds it, could you contact us? Okay, so that's the... It's a big stretch. It's like a runway almost between Ballyshannon and Bundoran. If you're walking and you find a phone on the hard shoulder, we know whose it is. It can happen. It's really, really easy. But let us know. 086 60 25,000. Okay, welcome back and welcome on to the show, Councillor Thomas Sean Devine of the 100% Redress Party. Thomas, good morning to you. How are you keeping?
Not too bad, Greg. Good morning to yourself and good morning to your listeners.
Right, we're talking about that bane in society, and that is blocking disabled parking areas. You'll focus on Letterkenny. What have you observed, Thomas?
Greg, shocking behaviour, to be quite honest, with some motors, like, and delivery drivers, lorries parking in double disabled parking spots in Main Street in Letterkenny. It's an ongoing occurrence. Greg, I've been told, I've witnessed it several times myself. I've actually photos of it on my phone, and it's unbelievable. You know, total disrespect for people with disabilities in their parking spots.
So what are you spotting? Is it like delivery lorries that maybe are parked across, you know, maybe they're doing a delivery and they're parked across the disabled parking bay, or are they actually in it, or what are you observing?
Greg, there's two disabled parking spots at the Market Square there in the Main Street, mm-hmm. Letterkenny. Delivery lorry picking up them two spots. Now, the man has to make deliveries, suppose. There's no other real parking in Main Street. Maybe if the deliveries areas is taken up, but still, it's no excuse. It's no... fine example, Greg, I drove down the Main Street, and when you have somebody parking up, you basically, because spots is limited, you have to drive right round the whole town again to come back down the Main Street to try and find a spot to get parked in. And when this is happening, you can't get them spots. It's shocking, Greg. It's only in the middle of last week. I've seen it again. I've seen a car parking at the disabled spot with no badge. I've seen a traffic warden at the car with a book out or the notepad out, they write. And a lady came out of the shop. It was only on for 5 minutes. Sorry, it won't happen again, whatever, in the car drove by. But that lady doesn't realise, Greg, she's taking up that spot. And her spots is very, very limited on the Main Street. Mm-hmm. And they have to drive around the town again to find another spot, you know. And we've seen the recent court appearances there with people getting banned for 3 months and fined €250. Some people think that's a bit harsh, Greg. You know, you can be fined up to €2,000 and been banned for 2 years.
But it's completely avoidable. I don't think it's harsh. It's completely avoidable. You've no business, if you're not... If you're not a person with a disability and a badge, you have no business being in these spaces. I would have no sympathy in this argument or this excuse. I was only there for a minute. You've quite rightly pointed out that minute means another lap of the town. Now, what do we do, though, Thomas? Because we've spent years sort of trying to appeal to better people's better judgment, to point out the fact that, you know, these spaces are there for a reason. Please respect them. We've also actually done the enforcement thing. You know, in 2023, 415 fines were issued. In 2025, that number went up to 2024, sorry, that number went up to 518. And as you've quietly referenced earlier this month, or late last month, sorry, or in the middle of last month, we had a judge came down hard on it, banning people from driving. So what else is left? So we've got the carrot, that didn't work. We're using the stick, that's not working. And yet here we are. People still are disregarding the law.
Greg, I don't know what people... I don't know what they're thinking, you know what I mean? And maybe it's a lapse in their judgment at times, but they need to stop, you know. The main street in Letterkenny, we have disabled parking spots on the left-hand side and down the main street, as everybody knows, it's a one-way system. Now, them disabled spots, Greg, is probably out for somebody like myself that can get out with sticks and move on. But if people with a wheelchair, them disabled spots on the left-hand side, it's not really much good to them because they can't get out to set up their wheelchair and traffic coming down the main street. The spots is very, very limited. And I would beg and encourage people to please stop parking on a disabled spot if you don't need to get it. We're limited. And I don't know, Greg, if it's still on goal. And especially around shopping centres, it's worse, Greg. I've seen vans with trailers on picking up two disabled spots nowhere near. It's happening. I think people believe that because they're in a private parking or private shopping centre car park that they can get away with it.
Would you like to see the owners or those who control or run the private car parks to be more proactive in clamping?
Yeah. 100%, Greg, I definitely believe that these private car parks and these shopping centres, they should be definitely more active on it. You know, there is a company there looking after one shopping centre, and I don't know, I've been told that they haven't got the authority to really do anything, you know. So I would like to see, I'm going to go and try and talk to some of these people in these shopping centres to see if they can.
In terms of Letterkenny, for instance, in the public parking, I found myself accidentally pulling into one. That's just to be completely honest with you. I turned, saw it, and jogged on again straight away. This is not an excuse because I should have checked more, right? But the writing on the ground was very faded. There was no vertical sign there to sort of indicate that the... Like, I'm not trying to give anyone a pass here and you have to put your hands up when you've done wrong, but are we sure that the dedicated parking spaces are very clearly marked so no one can be in any doubt that they're reserved for a person with a disability and a badge?
Greg, there's no question about it that some of these parking spots, the writing's very faded on them, the design. I think they should be, as they're in the north, they should be highlighted in a blue colour that they are standout.
Me too, I agree with you.
No mistake about them. You know, and I think that's some that...
And I think what that does as well, actually, the reason why I think that would be critical, Thomas, is because that amplifies the shame, right? So say, for instance, you can park over the graphic of a wheelchair and it's obscured. You can run into the shop, you can run out, you can jog on, right? Not many people might know what you did. But if they were blue and very clearly marked... I think your delivery drivers with the sign writing on the side of it or your motorists, I really do believe that that's the last thing that we need to do before we start saying, right, let's make the fines £10,000. I mean, not literally, but you know what I mean? Like, why don't we do that?
Yeah, it's definitely because the amount of money that's been raised through the fines, the money should be there that for the number of spaces that we have, they should be highlighted, it's no problem at all. You know, there's a constant argument there in the council about council owning their own road liners and stuff like that. So the capability is there to do it, Greg, and I think it should be done, you know.
I'm sure there's a paint solution. You know, I mean, the wheelchair is drawn on the road in paint, so I presume we can get blue paint and make sure that people are embarrassed to park in these spaces because they're very, very clearly reserved for people with a disability and a badge.
100% agree with you, Greg. 100% agree with you. You know, that's, as I say, when you see the delivery drivers, the lorries, and then parking these spots, you know, and it's pure ignorance. And I think, as you say, Greg, if it was highlighted out in a blue colour, that's...
Yeah, I just think the lorry drivers, the delivery drivers, or your I was only popping in for 5 minutes drivers, I think it would be really discouraging because it'd be very clear what you're doing. Very clear.
Yeah. 100%.
And it would take some guts to sort of not care what 30 people walking past your car thought. All right, but something needs to be done, Thomas. I mean, listen, as I say, we're getting the enforcement, we're getting the judges cracking down. We're getting the message out there that it's, you know, I've spoken to people that don't go into Letterkenny anymore, Thomas, because they've done the two loops of the town and they just head home and it's not worth it because they can't, with independence, get out of their vehicle or they can't unload a wheelchair from the back of the vehicle. And we can't have a situation like that where people's lives are being sort of interfered with like that,
I think. No, definitely not. You know, we're trying to encourage people to come into the town to shop, and it should be made as easy as access to them as possible. You know, it's That's it's not right, you know, Greg. And as you say earlier on, there's people genuinely makes an odd mistake here and there. The highlighting of the parking spots would be a brilliant idea, a brilliant the highlight to leave them alone. You know, there's not enough of these spots, Greg, in the town to start off with, you know, and what's there. Please, I encourage people that's listening that any, please leave them for the people that need them.
Yeah, and that includes people who have a badge and they're parking in these spaces and the person who the badge is for is not with them. You know, there is a bit of abuse of the badging system as well. Okay, Councillor, thanks very much for your time. I do appreciate it. Councillor Thomas Sean Devine of the 100% Redress Party. Right, when is the council going to fix the light on Castlefin Bridge? The lights, in fact. A woman got her car damaged this morning. Please tell the council to get the lights fixed. We'll inquire in relation to that and bring you that answer. A wee complaint want to make against EasyJet Airline. My family and I went to London on Sunday. Everyone got on the plane in Belfast International. No problem with hand luggage. On the way back from Luton Airport, one of our party was asked to put his case into measure. It fitted in, but when asked to put it sideways, it didn't fit. It was a little over. He had to pay £50, seeing as it was bigger. But here's the part I can't understand. He was still allowed to take the case on the plane. Is this just a scam to make more money, or is it the staff on commission for every one they charge? My question is, why was he allowed to take it with him if it was too large for the plane? Well, the oversight is on the outward band. If it's too large for the plane, I'm not sure how it works with EasyJet, but with Ryanair, for an example, the way they have it now is the overhead locker is reserved for the bigger bags. So whilst the bag may have ordinarily fitted under the seat, I don't know where EasyJet put those bags. Then it goes into the top holder. It's to discourage people taking unnecessary stuff with them. I'm not in favour of it, but I think that's the reason. Is it a scam? It's up to you. I mean, do you feel that you've already paid for it and you should be entitled to take it on? You know. Good morning. I've just been listening to that lady being charged for the compost bin and I thought I'd check my account. I'm also being charged every fortnight for a bin that I have never left out. I do not have any waste. I'm currently trying to contact the company about this. Everyone should check their account and be aware that they're being charged even if this bin is not being used. This happened in our house as well. This bin turned up unsolicited and then next thing you know, there's this direct debit charge for a bin that will never be put out because we don't have that waste to put into it. And lots of people are finding out for the first time they're being charged over €4 a month for something that they never asked for. We had the same issue with the company 2 months running, but with persistent contact, it was stopped. A caller says there's way too much plastic packaging. Everything is triple wrapped and getting worse. People can stop this by boycotting producers who overuse. Okay, and on it goes. Thanks for that. We were talking yesterday about an increase in the amount of plastic in our bins, and really the conversation kind of was, why are we given so much plastic? You know, we don't want half of it, but yet we have it. I'm in studio now with Stephen O'Donnell. Stephen, how are you getting on? Thanks so much for calling in.
No problem, Greg. Thank you for having me.
It's good to have you. I might move this in this direction if that's okay.
Sure.
Right. You were an early entrant into the defective blocks scheme. Was this scheme one that you signed up to, the 90-10, or the one that followed?
No, I started off in the 90-10 and then I got moved onto the enhanced scheme then after a period of time.
All right, so you were an early mover back in 2020?
2020, we started the operation where we got tested and stuff like that at that point. About probably due to the testing, it created some cracks inside the house. And in June 2021, we had to kind of move out on safety grounds. It just was getting a bit chancy, just where one of the cracks where there was a steel beam that was holding bison slabs and everything. We had to kind of just get out of there and engage with the scheme. I mean, after we kind of got the quotations, we realised there's a colossal shortfall, as everybody remembers, back in the 90-10 scheme. So we felt we're paying rent. We're going to have to do something here anyway. So we got ourselves moving anyway, and we had a lot of paperwork. Now, I would be fairly used to paperwork. You're putting it in, you're getting a lot of further informations back again. It kept going on. The cycle was going on, getting very, very frustrating. You know, but again, it was new to everybody, so you had to kind of tolerate it a wee bit. So as this was going on, we had a quotation done, but the cost of both product and labour was going through the roof at the time. It was huge. So we got started.
This was really kind of the time the war in Ukraine started as well. So concrete and everything else was
it seemed to be going up.
Wood and everything went.
Everything
through
was
the
going
roof.
On a weekly basis, nearly. You know, you go down and you get a price for something. They tell you this price is for 10 days. Mm. After that, we don't know. So we eventually got going. We started in October 22, and we were fully completed on the 31st of January 24. And we've received our final payment from the enhanced scheme around mid to late March 2024 is when we received it. So when we were finished, we were above the cap, and we'd paid about 25,000 in rent, which we hadn't got back as well, you know.
So you didn't get the 15,000 euro contribution to the rent?
No, because we're over the cap anyway, it was irrelevant.
Of course, because that comes out of the 420.
That comes out of the 420.
Yeah.
It wasn't a rebuild cost.
Yeah, I get you.
And one of the other frustrations, I suppose, as well, was we paid 7,000 in
testing
mm-hmm. at the very start. While now, if you go onto the scheme and you get the full, you get 420. The testing now is costing approximately 600-700.
And that's just for the initial visual. And then after that.
Yeah.
So. Before we get into the figures, was it a full demolition?
Full demo, yeah.
Did you take out the foundations?
Yeah.
Okay, so whatever was there before, it's gone.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you notice anything did your builder notice anything in the removal of the foundations?
It was, be honest with you, there was no consistency there. It was hit and miss. Some parts of the blocks, because my house is on a slope, some parts of the blocks came apart like Weetabix. Mm-hmm. Other parts, you need the rock hammer.
Wow.
There was no logic to it at all.
And were there any trends with prevailing winds and anything that you noticed?
Not particularly, no. Okay. We would be liable to get a lot of wind on one side. The big one for us that actually created most of the cracks was we pumped a cavity in 2015. Mm. And, you know, Semtex would have done the same job.
Yeah.
It absolutely sent it wild, you know, after that.
And the moisture can carry to the internal blocks then as well.
I've
heard.
Yeah, and once we had that core sample done, we had a bay window, and the core sample was taken inside the bay window. There was a crack appeared that day, and then by the time it accelerated, by the time we moved out of the house, which is the one that we were really wary of, you put your fingers on it then, like, you know, that was within 6 months.
Right, so you're 42,000 over the cap. Is that including the 25, or is the 25 rent
25
in addition
on top of that.
To it? All right, so just in terms of building 42K over. So where does that leave you? And what were you trying to sort of do during the process? You must have seen this coming, like your bank, the housing authority. I don't know. What was your process going through?
So we realised, obviously, fairly early, even though we're the 420, we were still going to be short. So we were trying to access money. So all through the process, I was in contact with my bank to see, was there anything set up, you know, regarding anybody with defective blocks. And they kept informing me as I went along, oh, there's a team getting set up, there's a team getting set up. This went on to close to the end. So by the end, they had nothing there. We had to go to the credit union. We went to credit union. We borrowed 50,000 at the credit union to get us finished, to get, you know, everybody as paid as best as we could. And then after that, there was something in place then from the AIB. I went back to them then and asked them.
It was a specific product for any top-up required for their customers in this process.
So it was from what I've been told, it's at a lower rate than that the credit union would be charging me. Mm. But when I went and asked the AIB about it, they says, you're finished, so you don't qualify for this loan. Even though the loan that I took out was to finish the house, they says, you don't qualify, sorry. That's it. End of story. Mm. End of engagement.
So one of the hopes you would have had, I suppose, was this 10% lift, which really I don't think applies to anyone at this point. But you would have perhaps had some hope if it applied to you that in some way you could claw this back and maybe write down the credit union loan. But because of the dates that are involved in that, you're not going to qualify for the update. So again, this is a tale of being punished for being an early mover, effectively.
Aye.
You missed out on the testing. You've missed out on a more attractive product perhaps with the AIB, and now you find that the 10% increase in the cap in the scheme will not, you don't qualify retrospectively for it. You're in no man's land.
Yeah, well, I don't know if you would call us an early mover or whatever you want to call it. When this 10% was announced anyway, there was no word of a date. or anything like that. So then this date appeared. Now, I've tried to get some statistics on it, which is really kind of the plea that I kind of have. So what I've been told is that there was, at this date that they declared, there was 43 houses totally finished, mm-hmm. remediated.
You're one of those.
Of the 43 houses, 20 of them were an option two, an outer leaf remediation. And of the 23 that are remaining, only 9 are over the 420 cap.
Okay.
So there actually is only 9 people involved.
And you've missed this by 2 months, effectively, 2 months and a bit.
Missed it by 2 months, or if you go by the payment, I've missed it by 2 weeks.
Yeah.
You know.
And given the small amount, it wouldn't take a massive expansion of the retrospective element of this to catch those 9 houses.
No, well, like if all 9 houses were the full 10% over, it comes to 378,000. Mm. But a couple of people have contacted me since who were finished before that date, and they weren't anywhere near the 42,000. So at the minute that stands, there is 3 of us I know of. There's 6 other people out there, which is kind of what I'm looking for. There's the 6 people out there. So the cost at a max at the minute is 318,000. Mm. That's if everybody was at the 42,000.
But obviously you can't find out people's information because of privacy reasons and stuff. So are you sort of trying to gather together an early movers group to try and get some sort of a campaign going?
Well, not a campaign. I'd like the numbers. Yeah. If I'm going to put an appeal in to the housing minister, it could be on deaf ears.
It's going to be more of a campaign than an appeal because they would have gone through all of this.
They've gone through it. Now, from what I've been informed, is this will come in. The data's there. It's going to be legislated, the data. Mm. So it's going to be an amendment, and whether they sign off on an amendment, and we've seen in the past, like, the pretty cold way that they dealt with the amendments in the past, you know, they just...
And in a way, though, if you were to get the extra 10%, I mean, it wouldn't fix everything and the scheme wouldn't be perfect, but you could argue it was a scheme that, for the most part, worked for you.
It would to an extent. See, but
I know there's bits, I know there's the rent, you know, and you're not going to get, everything's not going to be clawed back, I know that, but I mean, you know, for the most part, you know, if you could meet much of the extra loan that you had to get, and I know, of course, you have been putting your own money in here and there, but, you know, it would show that the scheme's not terrible for you. You know what I mean?
Not.
So it would be in the government's advantage, I think, to widen this.
That's been the case in a lot of cases, I think, throughout the whole process. They've come close to having something great, and then it's just like they put the devil in the detail, which just wipes the feet from under you.
The one thing I haven't heard an explanation for is the cut-off date, the retrospective cut-off date being March 2024.
So what I've been informed is that is a year since the enhanced scheme became active, and they're saying it has to happen on a yearly basis. Mm-hmm. But nobody at any time mentioned that this date would happen. I'm not saying I could have delayed the end of the house. We were rushing like mad to get into it.
That's where it starts getting frustrating. You couldn't see which way the wind was blowing.
No, you couldn't see.
Because you would really, if the truth be told, if you weren't to use hindsight, you would have had to have waited in excess of a year. It's not till March, because you wouldn't have known that March date until such time as it was announced. So, I mean, that's not
and it's the minimal amount of people that this is affecting. And it could be a case that they're thinking, listen, there's only 9 of them. They're not going to make that much noise. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And even from some of the fellas I've been talking to, they'd kind of had made their peace with it. But, you know, I've kind of started a fire a wee bit in them now.
Why leave because they're saying, the table,
why should we do this here? You know, it makes a very little difference to the government.
Well, it's going to be a many billion scheme. So if it turns out to be under 400 to catch everyone effectively, that's chicken feed in the wider scale of things.
That's to them, but it's a lot to us.
But it's also possible that you are just an oversight and maybe... You know, with the right correspondence, it might be addressed. TDs, local councillors, are they on board? Are they going to?
I've informed them anyway. I just wanted to get a full picture, if I could, before I really go at it. So, if anybody out there knows of someone who was finished prior to that date,
March
24. A lot of people have been in contact with me post that to say they haven't got the 10%, and I understand that that's frustrating. It isn't on board yet. And all the rest, but at least they have hope.
Yeah,
currently, we have none.
They're entitled to it, whether they've received it or not. Another question. How are the stage payments for you?
Stage payments were not too bad because I was early. The problem, the council didn't have that big of a, a workload. The final one was the one that was.
And just finally, because I don't have much time left, Stephen, if people say, right, I'm in that situation too, and they want to contact you, how do they, what's the best way to do so? We'll retain your info here if they want to give us a buzz.
Yeah, absolutely. If you want to give us a buzz, you can thing me, contact you, and you can pass on the numbers. I have no problem. Time is of the essence. I know there's a meeting again on the 20th of this month. So time is of the essence.
All right, listen, Stephen, thanks for calling in. I appreciate it. Stephen O'Donnell, give us a call. We'll put you in contact with Stephen. We'll be back with more after the news and obituary notices.